Global Venturing Review, the weekly podcast on our three publications, Global Corporate Venturing, Global University Venturing, and Global Government Venturing. My name's James Mawson. I'm founder and editor-in-chief. And with me, we have...
Thierry Healis, editor of Global University Venturing and Global Government Venturing.
Well, thanks so much, Thierry. Nice to chat away. Apologies I missed last week's podcast. I was unfortunately a bit unwell, but it seems like it was exciting news that week and also this past week. What have been the top three headlines that you've seen?
The biggest news of the past probably been Intel Capital's decision to divest up to $1 billion of its venture assets, which has caused quite a stir amongst our audiences, as far as I can tell, and rightfully so. Do you have any particular thoughts about that one, Jim?
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. Yeah, no, it's definitely been a sort of big news, but broke on sort of Bloomberg and people have been following. It's still a little unclear exactly how many companies or which sectors or segments Intel might be looking to divest from. I think the sort of the guidance is that Intel will still be investing $300 million to $500 million a year, so no change on that side. But maybe the thinking is that under a new chief executive and new head of Intel Capital, Wendell Brooks, when he spoke in our January conference in Sonoma in California, he talked about being much more strategic, and that means playing much more closely to the chipmaker's core strength, so perhaps probably around a data center, core chip technology, those types of things, as well as trying to lead and do bigger rounds. So it might be that perhaps some of the smaller portfolio or in less core areas, perhaps such as software or consumer tech, might be more surplus to Intel Capital's needs going forward, given that they've got 304 portfolio companies listed on their website and they've invested more than $11 billion over the past 20 years and more than 1,100 deals in total. They've got quite a range to choose from. So, but it's not yet clear exactly how many companies or even the total value. It might be up to $1 billion, but I suppose very much it's buyer prerogative. The venture market slowed down a little bit, but given the caliber of Intel, which has been very impressive over the past few decades in terms of the deals done, I'm sure there'll be plenty of interest in that portfolio.
That makes perfect sense. It's quite interesting to see, especially with SoftBank last year also saying that they were completely winding down their corporate venturing unit and focusing on larger scale investments. So maybe if that's where Intel is going as well, that we could make for quite some interesting developments in that world.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison, SoftBank. They certainly had a good track record in the earlier stage. They backed some other good funds, you know, and going slightly later stage and doing bigger deals that could be more strategic developments, I think will be very interesting. Certainly we're expecting to catch up more from Intel and the others at our Global Corporate Venturing Symposium in May after Wendell's first public appearance and announcement where he talked about his strategy going forward. So I think all eyes will be on what corporates are doing. So what other deals have you seen, Thierry?
Well, we've also had a very significant exit, which is Qualcomm-backed Cruise Automation, which has been acquired by General Motors for apparently, reportedly, more than $1 billion, which is obviously quite a significant amount, especially since Cruise Automation actually only disclosed $18 million in equity and debt funding since it launched 2 years or 3 years ago.
Mm. No, it's a great deal. Really shows the promise in sort of the auto tech segments. There's a lot of interest about both 3D printing of the cars as well as the use of the cars as sort of driverless vehicles and how they do it. I think Cruise was one of the few companies to have gone through California's state regulators in terms of applying for permission just before Christmas to have driverless cars on the road. And they'd obviously had quite a success in what they've been doing. I think what was interesting from our side is the fact that Qualcomm was able to do the deal really quickly. They only invested, I think, in November last year, so November 2015. You know, they went through their early round or early stage investment vehicle, so they could do the deals very quickly, 1 week, 2 weeks. And I think Varun, who had led the deal from Qualcomm, it came because he did a cold email to Carl, who ran Cruise Automation, and said, hey, this is how we could help. This is what we've done in other areas. Do you want to start a conversation? Within a few weeks, they'd been part of the round, and I think they were the third biggest investor in Cruise. And that's obviously a spectacular return. We're not sure exactly how much, but it looks like in terms of IRR and in terms of money multiple, I imagine it's a home run for Qualcomm. So just as we've been talking about SoftBank and Intel perhaps going later stage, perhaps going larger, we just see that there's some really home runs that can be scored from going early stage and supporting some of those areas if you have a thesis-driven investment approach. So Qualcomm, under their new managing partner, Quinn Lee, has a great success already this going in 2016.
Certainly great start to the year, yeah.
They drove to a home run, we can almost say. Anything else?
We've also had another acquisition, which is Spoon Rocket, a delivery service that's been acquired by iFood, which is itself backed by Mobile Internet and Warehouse Investimentos, I think it's pronounced, just a short few days after it was actually announcing that it was going to shut down. So quite interesting save there.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I think we've seen a sort of slightly slower market, particularly on the early stage, and a number of companies that had raised quite a considerable amount of money. I think Spoon Rocket raised quite an amount of money from Y Combinator, among others, and suddenly saying, well, okay, we haven't got the traction, let's pivot, let's sell, and return some money back to investors and move on and try something else, which is a great Valley approach, and it's really commendable sense of of what an entrepreneur could do if you haven't quite reached attraction. And then suddenly what was interesting was iFood has actually been one of the real success stories in Latin America, which hasn't had too many entrepreneurial success stories. And it's been backed by Movili, which again is a corporate venture backed company, but backed in this case by Naspers, a South African media company. But Naspers has provided a huge amount of money to Movili in order to expand. It's been really successful in terms of internet and consumer e-commerce delivery in Latin America, particularly in Brazil. We had the chief executive of Movili speak at our sort of Brazilian conference, actually, and he was fascinated about how in an environment where there's not a huge venture ecosystem, you can almost create an internal venture ecosystem within a company. So they've been one of the most exciting and innovative corporate venture programs themselves, having been originally corporate venture backed by Naspers only a few years ago, and now taken out iFood, which was a venture-backed company, and trying to sort of continue their growth. Movili has an operation in Palo Alto, so in the Silicon Valley area, just up the road from Apple, actually. And so suddenly I think we see a couple of trends really coming, that the sort of high support that corporate venturing can provide to companies, in this case Movili, then giving it the resources and the ambition to take out peers which might have been venture-backed in other areas and trying to continue the fast growth. So I think as we see a venture market which has slowed down a little bit by maybe a quarter or a third, actually we start to see the companies which are successful and winning really using this as an opportunity to expand out and acquire others. So fascinating deal all around, that one. It's definitely one that caught my attention.
Interesting stuff. I because usually we don't really cover the acquisitions unless the acquired startup is backed by corporate, but there's certainly some interesting views that you got out of that one.
Yeah, no, it's a joy of seeing the news come across, and fortunately, we had a good beer after the conference with the chief executive of Movili. He's a really stunning guy, actually, really impressive what he's been able to achieve. So when I saw that float across the wires, I was like, oh, there's definitely something in there. So great interest. And what else have you seen in terms of other news from global corporate venturing, global university venturing, and global government venturing, Thierry? Also, any other big exits?
We have one exit. I'm not sure if I would call it big. It's probably a bit disappointing for Roche and Novo. It's Corvus Pharmaceuticals IPO, which originally targeted 115 million, but then it's reduced the target size now to $70 to $80 million, which is actually less than the 108 million that it raised in venture funding over the past 2 years. So if Roche and Novo get an exit, it's probably not going to be that lucrative.
Sometimes they say the IPO is just your next funding round rather than an opportunity to exit. It kind of provides more money, helps the growth, and then you might be able to sell later once it's delivered on its future promise. So it might be interesting to see if Roche and Novo do exit, or whether they just use it as another growth equity round and hang on in there with Corvus. Certainly we've seen quite a lot of healthcare activities. There were lots of IPOs back in 2014, started a slow last year, and a few are still getting away. I think one of the other ones we've also seen in the healthcare space is an interestingly named Hutchinson China MedTech. or Chimed to its close friends and colleagues, which has been backed by a Japanese conglomerate called Mitsui Financial Orientated, which raised a little more than $100 million when it floated on NASDAQ. And I think that shows that although things have slowed down, there's still quite a lot of activity in the healthcare space. Have you seen anything on the investment side in that area?
We have actually had Genome DX, which is already backed by Merck's Global Health Innovation Fund, raised $25.4 million in its Series C round, which is actually the first time that the company has revealed any amount of funding, although it still only did it in a regulatory filing, so it's not too keen on putting the numbers out there, I guess.
Well, it's a hot area, anything to do with genomes and in terms of understanding, you know, the personalized medicine and how actually you can take an illness and treat the individual with it, I think is still a really hot space. So that's definitely one to watch. Anything in other sectors, Thierry?
We have one from the financial sector, which is UK-based LendInvest, which is basically an online lending marketplace for the property market, which has been backed by Kunlun, and they've recently raised £17 million from Atomico, the VC firm.
Interestingly, Atomico was, we're doing this call on Skype to have the podcast and record the podcast. And Atomico was founded by one of their founders, Nicholas Sandstrom, of Skype. He used the money, his win, when they sold initially to eBay and then secondly to Microsoft. He used the part of the money to set up his own venture capital firm, Atomico, raise a couple of funds now, and they've been putting the money out in all around the world, actually. So they've been quite a successful venture capital firm. So it'd be interesting to see how LendInvest goes on that side. And the fact that they've already got a Chinese investor in Beijing Kunlun there, I think just shows the sort of global potential for the online lending marketplace. We'll see plenty of activity in that space, I'm sure.
They've certainly been quite active, yeah, popping up on the radar quite a lot recently.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of activity in China, and although things have slowed down, particularly in Silicon Valley in the West, everyone's been a bit more cautious and waiting. We've seen fewer large deals there, certainly nothing too much over 100 million. We've actually seen some in China. What have you seen there, Thierry?
Well, we've had Tencent actually leading a $100 million Series B round for Douyu TV, which is basically the Chinese equivalent of Twitch, as in users can live stream their video games to other users. And Tencent apparently invested a whole 60 million into that round, which is quite a decent chunk of money.
I think it's one of the fastest growing areas within YouTube, and some of those is, you know, record your games that you watch, you know, do a voiceover and then post it live, you know, whether it's a farming simulation or whatever else, you know, or Minecraft, another Microsoft product now, and, you know, and actually the sort of virtual reality games and that whole gaming space and recording and showcase. I think there was like 40,000 people watched people playing video games in front of them, and then a couple of million people were online watching the live stream. So, you know, it's a fantastic area. It's just really grown spectacularly. So the fact that Tencent is back in Douyu TV, I think will really show the potential on that side of things. And I think Twitch was bought by Amazon about 18 months ago, so maybe we could even see some early exits on that side. What else have we seen from Tencent's rival Alibaba?
Well, we have logistics spin-out. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce this. Kanyao.
Sounds pretty good to me. Carry on.
That was actually featured in a big deal on globalcorporateventuring.com this week, because they reportedly raised $1.54 billion in a round that valued it at $7.7 billion, which certainly quite a big amount of money in the Chinese corporate venturing world there.
Wow, that's just amazing. So Alibaba's got a $60 billion valuation for its financial services affiliate. Alibaba itself is worth hundreds of billions now, probably. You know, and then another of its spin-outs, Kanyao, is also raising money in the multi-billion. So, you know, just shows when you get attraction, then you're able to spin out other companies which can also raise money and have high valuations. It's a dream for many companies to be a unicorn, you know, and have a high valuation. But the fact is, once you get to that scale and that size, it almost seems that you could throw off anything and that could raise money. But it's really impressive to watch from Alibaba how they've been able to not just grow the core business, but also create so many affiliates, which have also been hugely valuable companies. I think, you know, in the US, people sometimes lose sight of the fact that Chinese startups are in many ways almost more successful than and many of the US peers, and certainly stuff that's seen outside those two hubs of venture market, China and the US. So fascinating there, Thierry. Have we seen anything else in China, in the Asian region? I've certainly seen something, again, in that sort of online games area. We've seen one from H&A Group, have we?
We have indeed. We have H&A that has committed $185 million to an online sports streaming platform called Lee Sports as part of a Series B round that could actually reach over $1 billion. I think it's $1.08 billion, which again is just a staggering amount. And it seems to be kind of a recurring figure, the $1 billion in this week's podcast, certainly.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's, I think we were just lauding Qualcomm getting an exit for $1 billion and potentially more than $1 billion with Cruise. And now, here's a round which might itself be more than $1 billion, or even Kenya, which, raised $1.5 billion. It's just staggering amount still, even, and I think the sort of talk of a slowdown loses sight that if you are showing the potential and you have got the growth, there is still plenty of money out there. So, fascinating deal on that side. Yeah, but have we seen anything in the US? Like I say, we haven't seen those really big rounds, 100 million plus rounds that we were seeing a few months back so often, but we've seen an interesting one over there, have we?
We have indeed. There's a company called Ring, which makes a smart doorbell that basically lets you see and talk to visitors without actually opening the front door, or even if you're not at home, which is great if you want to stop burglars, kind of just ringing the bell and trying to get in. But they're backed by American Family Insurance and JF Shear, and they've received $61.2 million from Kleiner Perkins Caulfield and Byers and Richard Branson.
So a nice Series C round there for Ring, and given the success that Google bought Nest, which is a kind of thermostat controlling company for over $1 billion. Maybe people have got an eye on a nice unicorn exit for that one as well. So that's a really interesting one. Anything on the university or government side, Thierry?
We have on actually both university and government and corporate. We covered Apria last week, a Sweden-based biotech that's a spin-out of Karolinska Institute that's raised $51 million. Which is the biggest for any Karolinska portfolio company and also the biggest for a Sweden-based life sciences company in the past decade. So even though that's not anywhere close to the 1 billion figure, it's still very impressive, certainly for that small Nordic country.
I think Sweden, Karolinska ran into a few troubles, let's call it that, over the past year or so. They had to revalue the portfolio and they've had a change of sort of management. They've done a lot to sort of reposition themselves, I think, if we term it there. So it's nice that they've bounced with a pretty big win, it looks like, with Apia in terms of the excitement and interest. And anything in terms of investments on the university side?
We have had a spin-out from University College London.
Autolus, was this?
That's the one, yes. Which raised $57 million in its Series B round. And they're working on engineered T-cells, which is part of the body's immune system, that can attack hematological and solid tumours without actually targeting healthy cells as well, which is often a problem with cancer treatments, obviously. And then just makes you more sick and harder to recover.
Do we know if UCL, which just raised their first university venture fund relatively recently, did they put some of their own money into the deal as well, do you know?
Not as far as we can tell. From what we've seen, it's been Woodford and Perceptive Bioscience Investments that's provided the capital.
Okay, well, that's an interesting one, and one we haven't yet written up on Gov, but it'll be coming out next week, no doubt. But I was chatting away to a law firm called Auric, a chap called Sven Grulik, who's been organising actually a corporate and venture conference next month that we'll be talking at in Dusseldorf. And it's been quite an interesting deal that he was telling me about. So it's just about to come out a bit more publicly. But a firm called Aceclap, which is a subsidiary of a German group called B. Braun Meslungen, which is a supplier of medical technology, effectively. So Aceclap has just done their first corporate venturing deal in a company called Neuroloop, actually. And Neuroloop is a spin-off of the Central Department for Tech Transfer at the Albert Ludwig University in Freiburg. So a catchy name there. I kind of imagine the acronym's almost as long as most words. But it looks like a really exciting deal. The first corporate venture deal of a big university one. And it's actually considered one, if not the largest, university spin-offs in Germany. So congratulations to Aesclap and obviously to the advisors Sven and his colleagues over there. So really exciting to see that dynamic between corporates, VCs and universities really starting to drive through. Have we seen any sort of people changes? I think one of the exciting things in our space is always to watch the people change and develop. We've seen, you know, we started talking about Intel Capital and the new boss, Wendell, making some changes on that side. Anything else on the university piece?
We've only seen one this month, or so far as well, which is Douglas Crawford, who was the associate director at QB3, a research institute and life sciences accelerator of the University of California system. And he stepped down from that position, although he will stay with Mission Bay Capital and QB3 at 953, also a very catchy name, which he helped launch during his time with the Institute. And kind of, they haven't quite figured out yet how the three organizations will relate to each other following his departure, but apparently they're trying to work that out, and I'm sure we will cover that when the news emerges.
Yeah, funny enough, when I was living in California, QB3 had a great reputation. I went to some interesting events in that space in San Francisco. It's a little more off the beaten track some ways. It certainly was a few years ago. I think it's probably come up a bit since. But I think the work that Doug and his colleagues have done in that space was really great. So it's interesting to see the changes on that side. And funny enough, we'll actually see some further changes. So I think at our Global Corporate Venturing Symposium in May 24th, 25th, we're delighted to have some keynote thoughts from Claudia Van Munts, who used to run IBM Venture Capital Group. She's now a venture advisor at NEA, the largest VC firm, as well as a director at Best Buy and other places. But her replacement will also make his first sort of appearance on stage. And still a little early to say that George will be coming on board. But for those who want to really get the breaking news, do keep on tracking Global Corporate Venturing. We will reveal all about the new head at IBM Venture Capital Group. So exciting news still to come. And it's been an exciting week, Thierry. I'm glad I'm no longer feeling as ill as I was.
Well, it's certainly good to have you back on your feet, Jim.
Cool. Likewise, pleasure to be back. Thanks so much, Thierry. And thanks to you all for listening to the Global Venture and Review podcast. It's from James Mawson and Thierry Hellis. If you do need to get in touch with us, please do. Always keen for any feedback. You can get hold of me at jmawson, J-M-A-W-S-O-N, at globalcorporateventuring.com. And Thierry, do you want to give your email address?
It's T-H-E-L-E-S at globalcorporateventuring.com.
Have a good weekend. Bye.
Bye.
Global Venturing Review was produced by In Ear Production. You can find out more by going to inearproduction.com.